Hi, welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast brought to you by Shoshinworks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. I'm your host, Ed Powell, CEO at TensorX, where we leverage the cloud, the crowd, and AI to inform corporate strategy, drive system design, and optimize operational performance. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we build for resilient futures. In this series brought to you by Shoshinworks in collaboration with NASA, we explore these new ecosystemic models and the impacts they will have on the future. In this episode, we continue to dive into artificial intelligence and how it is potentially exacerbating misguided incentives for organizational transformation instead of being utilized to inform a larger shift in reforming organizational structure. My co-host today is James Villarubia. James is a Presidential Innovation Fellow with NASA. Morning, James.
Morning, Ed. Thanks for the intro. Excited to be here. And hello, everyone. As Ed mentioned, I'm James Villarubia, a Presidential Innovation Fellow with NASA, where I help the engineers and the scientists there integrate AI into their research and their innovation. I'm also a former social impact startup CTO and CEO, and have worked on tech policy at the Pentagon, White House, and DOJ. So big orgs, big complex problems. So any sort of wisdom or insight that we can learn from our guest today, how we tackle those big problems is very beneficial. So I'm excited to be back here again with Brian. So over to you, Ed.
Thanks, James. With us for part two of this deep dive into humanizing artificial intelligence is Brian Evergreen, Senior Fellow, C-Suite Advisor, and author of the new book, Autonomous Transformation. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks, Ed. I'm excited to be here.
Brian, can you provide a little bit of background on your work and then transition into today's episode?
Yes, absolutely. So for my work, I'll give the cliff notes since this is our second episode. So I was an internationally competitive chess player. And then when I decided to not do chess anymore, I entered the corporate sphere and I've worked at Accenture and AWS and Microsoft. A couple of the leadership positions I've held at Microsoft were as the US AI strategy lead and the global head of autonomous AI co-innovation. And so I've been working with Fortune 500 C-level executives primarily for the past many years to help them design and build their AI strategies. And then I've gotten kind of a firsthand look at how effective or not effective those outcomes have been. And so I'm excited to be here and share some of the things that I've learned.
Great. Well, it's great to have you. So as we discuss the potential for AI to not be a replacement for a strategy, in turn to exacerbate underlying problems in your organizational structure, what are some issues to consider when reframing how organizations leverage AI to optimize performance and drive innovation?
So I'll say a couple of things. One is that if you think about from a strategy perspective, the first thing that I'll say is that strategy cannot precede vision. And so when I work with organizational leaders, a first question I ask is they'll say, Brian, okay, we're excited for you to help us with our AI strategy. Let's go ahead and get the work kicked off and we'll get together in a brainstorm session or go to a summit or offsite. And then I'll ask them first question, okay, what's your vision? And often I get blank stares or, okay, wait, do you mean our mission statement? And but the answer is no. What I mean is, what future are you trying to create within your organization? And we can't build a strategy without knowing which direction we're, I can't program the GPS, so to speak, if I don't know what your destination is. And so that's the first thing I'd say. The second thing I'd say, specific to organizational structure, as you mentioned, Ed, is that your technology, your business, and your people strategies are interdependent. And yet most organizations develop them in silos. And then in some ways end up coming and blaming each other for the things that aren't working out, right? At their worst, at their best, they're developing them in silos and then maybe comparing notes at the end and still frustrated that for some reason, it's not all working seamlessly. And so it's a little bit of a systems problem in that sense that if you're trying to transform your organization to be able to leverage and harness these AI advanced digital twins and other types of technologies, it's not only a technology, it's also a business and a people strategy refresh that you need. And they need to be done together at the same time because they are interdependent. So you wouldn't, if you had a car, you wouldn't design them three separate companies in three separate factories, and then maybe at the end try to bring it together without them having been thought through and designed upfront. Like the design accounts for all the different pieces that need to go together in order for the car to work. And then sure, it can then be built separately, but it, at the stage of design, it's including all those different factors. And so I think it's the same with AI, that people want to come in and say, okay, our data's bad, let's say, or maybe we're struggling with our business models. How can AI come in and fix all of that? And the answer is that it presents an opportunity to revisit those business models and to clarify which data should be focused on that either can be created or that needs to be transformed or reformed. But that if AI or generative AI or none of these new technologies can fix fundamental problems within an organization.
I really like that example. I like the reference to sort of the silos. I mean, from the government perspective, I think silos is a constant term that we're hearing about. We got to break out of the silo. But I can imagine for a technology like AI, there might be a sort of a tendency for sort of the non-technical people to think, oh, I'll just create a new bucket, a new silo, put some AI people in there, give it some money and say, go. But I think from the technologists out there who are listening would realize that AI is actually the top of a pyramid sitting on a strong software development cycle, DevOps, infrastructure, cloud, scalability, cost management, and then a sort of human capital and HR that hire the right skills to build all of those layers. So I can see how those sort of things get confused. Can you talk about sort of what those sort of transformational conversations are like? How do you pitch that to a C-suite to sort of get them to understand that it's an all or nothing, not really a sort of a point solution?
I really like that question, James. What I'd say first is that I completely agree that if you just stand up a new AI group, that you're effectively funding research, right? It's not applied at that point if it's just a siloed AI group. And that, if that's what you want to do and you're hoping to put out great white papers that don't influence or impact your business or your organization, then that's you can make that choice. But in terms of your question, what I'd say is that a couple of things. So the way that I speak with C-level executives or organizational leaders about this is I first share that, okay, we know AI is going to transform the way that we work. We know that's true, that either you're going to make a change or the market's going to make a change for you. And if you want to have control over the future of your organization, you're already moving toward the future one way or another. And you can either do that with intention by designing that future that you want to create, or you can let the future sort of pull you in whatever direction it pulls you, or you can back into the future effectively. And so that's the first thing, you know, is impetus for the conversation. And then in terms of how can we think about this from a transformation perspective is saying, okay, if we're going to get this right, we need the components that make up a successful AI initiative, like you mentioned, is it's an entire cross-organizational, the people that are working on it, i.e. the technologists, the industry experts or domain experts. In NASA's case, it might be an aeronautical engineer, and it could be an astronaut that has that experience and that they can speak to that the data scientist doesn't know intuitively. So they need to work together. And so if you're wanting to make some kind of transformation within your organization to harness these the economic and societal potential of these technologies, it begins with a microcosm at the top level of the organization that can both design and then have organic sort of butterfly effects throughout the rest of the organization. That's the first thing I'd say. The second is that, coming back to an illustration of the people, sort of people element in this transformation, then I think could be that I wrote about in the book and I think is particularly maybe interesting to folks at NASA, is that I describe data scientists as being like astronauts. So if you think about most data scientists that get into the field, lately more and more people have been getting in the field because of the economic potential and because it's a very valid career path from that perspective. But the folks that have been in it for a long time, they often got into it because they wanted to be at the very frontier of research and discovering new methods of leveraging information. And what happens sometimes is when organizations hire a data scientist, that's their natural bend. They want to do something that no one's ever done before. It's like, and they hire them thinking, okay, I want you to improve 1% efficiency on this one process. And that's relatively dry, but that's going to help us economically. That's sort of, and we already know that it's been done because some other data scientist did it. We want you to redo their work here within our context. To me, I describe that, and I'd be curious in your perspective on how well this analogy fits, but in terms of that data scientist experience, it, to me, in the book, I describe it as it's like if you hired an astronaut and said, I want you to, you don't get to go to space. You're gonna stay here and you're gonna recreate research at some other astronaut. They already discovered something, but we need that in our organization to get an extra 1% efficiency. So you're gonna recreate their work. And I'd be curious how well that would go with astronauts at NASA.
Here's your Cessna. You can fly the Cessna today.
Right. Yeah. So I guess my question sort of click a little further into that. I hate that phrase, but I'm gonna use it. You referenced the economics of these decisions as being sort of pretty critical to this. What are the sort of common missteps that you think we're making? I mean, ROIs, I think that you say ROIs could be a bad consideration. To me, that was sort of heresy, but I think there's nuance there. And I want to understand, I feel like there's probably some better reframing of economics that we need to consider for thinking about these sort of transformational things. Can you talk about sort of your experiences there?
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing I'd say is that ROI is not, I wouldn't say that it's bad all the time, obviously, right? Because it depends on your risk profile, it depends on what you're trying to do, right? So if you're at a state in your organization where you're just battening down the hatches because you're facing some kind of economic issue and you just need to do some small efficiency gains because you just need to just stay in business or to for your organization to keep moving forward, then sure. ROI is probably the only metric you can really focus on. But if you're trying to do something new and you're trying to leverage a technology that's new and that would be differentiating in some way from a NASA perspective, if you're trying to do something with AI and in space that no one's ever done before, then ROI is not necessarily the measure that's going, it's going to naturally drive innovation out of your organization if it's the main gatekeeper of whether or not you approve something. Because you cannot prove ROI in advance for something that's new, because there's no data for something that's new. It's sort of unscientific. But then the second, so I talk in the book about reformational economics, because basically it's economic conditions of our organizations that mean that we cannot transform or do anything transformational, but we can only do things that are reformational, which is to improve something without changing its composition or structure. And so a lot of it in the book I write about digital reformation, a lot of organizations have coined things digitally, been calling this is our digital transformation initiative. But in the end of the day, they're proving something and that's still very valuable. But it's digital reformation. There's nothing transforming about the way that they work or the way they deliver value to the world or to their clients or customers. And so one of the examples of a reformational economic paradigm is the economics of omission versus commission. And what I mean by that is that in our accounting systems, we account for the acts of commission, the decisions, the risks that are taken. And so if a leader has four options and they say, I'm going to pick option A, at the point of record, option A is the only thing recorded, right, in our systems. And that person's measured on how well each thing, option A, whichever option they choose throughout their career, the string of options they've chosen, but all the strings of options that they left on the table are just like chaff, right? They're just blown away. There's no record of that. And so what that does is it naturally incents leaders to only pick the sure bets, which mean the things that other people have already done to the degree that we know that it works, that we know that it's a sure bet. And so that way, sure, you can on your annual or quarterly review, you can say, look, we got 3% efficiency. That's part of my performance for this year. But what maybe was left off almost always is left off the discussion is, and then these are the risks that I didn't take that totally would have panned out and would have been way more valuable than those 3% efficiencies that we gained. And so if you think about having two senior directors up for a VP position, for example, right now, if you want to make that VP spot, you got to pick very low risk things and always them be as successful as often as possible. But imagine instead in our accounting systems, at the point of every major decision, investment decision over, let's say, a certain amount, you also look at the risks not taken and record them at the same time. And then you have a panel, let's say, or some kind of function in the organization that can then on an annual or half yearly basis, go back through all the risks not taken and say, what would the likely result have been? Then you, by the time you get to those two senior directors, after you have a decade or so, or even a couple of years of those kinds of records that are up for the VP position, you're getting the full picture of that person as a human and their risk profile and how they make decisions and how those pan out. And as opposed to just the sort of numbers of, okay, these are the three initiatives and this is the total ROI. And so therefore this person has been, and they've led this many people, right? And therefore this is the person that needs to make it to VP. Instead, you're getting a more rounded, and back to kind of my core, I guess one of my core insights about all of this is that it really is the way we get more value out of technology. It starts with how we treat and work with the humans in our organization. And so this is an example of that sort of human-centered based accounting, accounting for the whole picture of those humans making those decisions, as opposed to just the sort of recording the numbers of each decision.
So when we look at these kind of costs, the costs of omission, the costs of commission, when we think about the role of AI and vision and strategy, doesn't this really argue that if you have a siloed organization, this AI initiatives have to operate at a very high level, at least the head of strategy and preferably the CEO?
Yes, that's exactly what I say that also, speaking from the work that I've done in the private sector, that tracks to the level of focus that people have been putting on for at least around 5 years or so. It's been bubbling up to at least the CIO, but often with other organizational leaders, the CFO, CTO, obviously CTO, but also line of business leaders, the chief head of manufacturing, for example, and yes, CEOs have been involved as well in different initiatives and discussions that I've seen, and not just a sort of cursory executive sponsor, but actually in the discussions and giving input. And so yes, I think that it is very critical that these are, because of the degree of transformation. So if you think about it, if you're the CEO at the top level of an organization, and then the newest wave, or the, not newest, but one of the biggest waves of the transformation is headed toward your organization, do you want to delegate that to someone else to try to figure out, when really it starts with design at that, by someone who understands the culture, understands the economic incentives across the organization, and has the sort of social and political capital within the organization to drive that degree of change that's needed for these to actually be successful?
I like that sort of summary around the sort of person with the political capital, because what I've seen, and sort of tying in a few points you've made, is that if AI or other sort of large initiatives are getting shoved into stovepipes, and you can see this in organizations where they've got sort of a director of innovation, and that person's review is like, great, you can take all the risky bets because your performance plan looks different than every other VP, every other senior director. And then right. What they're sort of stuck doing is, from an underfunded separate stovepipe that's mostly doing research, trying to build coalitions of the willing to sort of bottom up transform the enterprise without sort of the backing of the vision of the C-suite, without the sort of backing of like, hey, we all need to do this. We're all part of this innovation process.
That's right.
I mean, that's a pattern I can see today. So it's really interesting that you're sort of tying that all together. And again, like, we're headed straight into this with AI, and I already see job descriptions coming out, but with this sort of rule. So it sounds like you are right on the pulse here.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I agree completely. I've seen that happen so many times the thing I always point out there is that you can't outsource vision, right? So theoretically, you could hire some very incredibly intelligent people from top tier firms to attempt to create a vision for your organization. But what they don't have is all of that cultural history, and they don't have all the knowledge and context of what's possible or not possible within a specific domain. And sure, maybe they recently left and they do. So that there's exceptions, of course. But I'd say as a rule, the best person or best people to come up with a vision for the future of an organization that is going to be transformative, especially with something like these technologies, are the people that have the full purview and deeply understand the organization and its history and its culture and its people and how it's funded, right? Those are the people that have all of the context that's needed to create the vision. And so I think that for me, what I'm hoping is that folks that are in those sort of more consulting roles, instead of trying to create the vision for those leaders, can facilitate those leaders creating their own visions, because vision and visioning is a skill, just like anything else. And so that can be developed. And so, yeah, that's part of this future that I'm definitely working to create and hopeful for.
Well, thanks, Brian. It's clear from the discussion that integrating and utilizing artificial intelligence offers profound benefits, but organizations must first grapple with redefining their vision and mission in the presence of these two new technologies to rehumanize and reform all of work.
Yeah, I am just really struck by sort of all the patterns that we've seen throughout sort of history that you've mentioning is you tie them all together and say, hey, these are connected. And to see that all sort of coming to a head in AI so clearly is sort of awesome. So I think I'm excited to dig deeper into your book.
My pleasure.
Really enjoyed hearing your perspectives on AI and advanced computing technologies, specifically in helping to understand the broader applications, implications, and dependencies on organizational structure and design. Make sure to check out this last episode of the series where we continue the conversation with Brian Evergreen about leveraging advanced technologies to become future rather than problem solvers.